Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 188, entitled, How to Discover the Real You, Figure Out Your Purpose, and Love Life Fully, I chat with Coot Blackson. Coot Blackson is a transformational teacher, human potential visionary, and national best-selling author of the book, You Are the One. In today's episode, Coot talks about the power of forging your own path in life, how he did it, and how others can do the same. He discusses the ups and downs along the way, the challenges he had to face, and the lessons he's learned over the years about truly being happy and fulfilled. Coot shares his captivating story and helps us identify how we can discover our own truth in life and love our lives like never before. If you're wondering how to discover the real you, figure out your true calling, and love life fully, check this episode out now. You are going to absolutely love it. Hey, I've got some fantastic news to share with you today. We've just launched our Elite Man store where you can finally get yourself the official Elite Man t-shirts, sweatshirts, long sleeve shirts, and even tank tops to look incredible and feel even more incredible when you step outside your home. That's right, after years of getting emails and messages about putting together some official Elite Man gear for all you elite men out there, I had to take some action and appease the masses of enthusiastic gentlemen. And boy, are you going to be happy. We've got some really slick looking, comfortable, and badass shirts, sweatshirts, and tanks right now, and I know you're going to absolutely love them. I've been wearing these shirts myself for the last few weeks and couldn't be more thrilled with how they've come out. So if you want to represent the Elite Man brand anywhere you go and look ridiculously cool in just about any setting, head on over to elitemanmagazine.com/store and order your favorite Elite Man shirt right now. Look incredible, feel incredible, and show the world exactly what an Elite Man embodies. Again, that's elitemanmagazine.com/store to order your favorite Elite Man gear. elitemanmagazine.com/store. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Coot Blackson from cootblackson.com. Coot, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I went through the notes a few minutes ago and haven't had a chance to read the book, but I'm really excited to read your recent book that you came out with. It's already a national bestseller. It focuses primarily on finding your purpose, discovering the real you, and living love fully, not life fully, but love fully, which is pretty cool. Man, I talk about purpose all the time on the show. It's a very interesting topic, discovering your purpose, going after your passions, living a life that you truly love. So I think this goes hand in hand with the elite man philosophy and what we tend to talk about on the show and how we guide men into living those kinds of lives. For the listeners who haven't heard your name before, can you just take maybe 30 seconds or so, 60 seconds, and just talk about how you got to the point of being this transformational teacher that you are today? I mean, you've been on Larry King, national bestseller, all these incredible shows and accolades now. How'd you get to that point?
Well, it ain't going to be 30 seconds. I can do my best to condense it, but it's probably going to take more than 30 seconds. You know, look, I was born in Ghana, West Africa. My father's from Ghana. My mother's Japanese. I grew up in London. Two things I'll say is my first memories as a young boy was always a deep calling to serve humanity. I always felt this deep sense, this deep driving desire. I wanted to make a difference in people's lives. I felt it as a child. I didn't understand why. I didn't understand what it was going to look like. But I just knew I wanted to help people and that my life wasn't my life. And so one of my first memories literally also was being this chubby kid in Ghana, West Africa, maybe around 6, 7, 8 in that zone, and seeing this crippled woman crawling on the floor. I see this crippled woman crawling on the floor. She's crippled. She can't walk. She can barely move. She picks up the sand this man walks on, wipes it on her face, and stands up. And so week after week, what really impacted me today was I grew up seeing blind people see and deaf people hear and people stand up, have wheelchairs, and all sorts of, you could say, crazy miracles occur. This man whose sand she picked up would look at a woman in a wheelchair and say, stand up out of this wheelchair. You're not sick. Stand up. Do you believe? And people would stand up, cancer being cured, incurable illnesses, all sorts of crazy things happening. This man was my father. He built 300 churches in Ghana, West Africa, hundreds of thousands, you know, I mean, like literally hundreds of thousands of followers in Ghana, West Africa, had a huge church in London, 300 churches in Ghana. Age 8, I started speaking in my father's church. Age 14, I was ordained and kind of given the mandate to take over. I was announced as the guy who was taking over my father's church. Cut a long story short, though, I knew that when it was announced that my father's, you know, congregation that I was going to be taking over, I knew that that wasn't my path. I felt a deep calling in my heart that something was off, you know, something wasn't quite right, but I didn't have the courage to tell him, this is not my path. I was afraid if I spoke my truth, I would lose love. If I spoke my truth, I would lose his, I would be abandoned. I'd be outcast. I'd be alone. And so I suppressed my truth at 14, as, you know, any kid that wants to be loved and wants his father's love and validation and approval. And 4 years, it burnt me up. But, you know, one thing that also impacted me today is from a very young age, I gave my first talk at 18, at age eight, in front of 5,000, 6,000 people. From that moment, I became very obsessed with, you could say, I don't know, personal growth. But it was more like I started asking myself the questions, who am I and why am I here? What's the purpose of life? And, you know, why do some people who seem to have everything seem to be miserable? Why do some people who seem to have nothing seem to be, you know, happy and fulfilled? And so I began asking myself these questions. And age 18, I finally mustered up the courage to, you know, I read literally 800 books by the time I was 18 in the realm of spirituality, personal development, psychology, just trying to figure this thing out. And I figured there has to be more than waking up, going to sleep, eat, sleep, make money, have sex, go on a vacation, and then die. What is the purpose? And so at 18, I finally mustered up the courage to have the conversation with my father. Told him, I'm not taking over your churches. I love you, but it's not my path. It was the scariest moment of my life. But it's the moment my life started. And cut a long story short, won a green card in a lottery and came to the U.S. And so, look, I could keep going, but that gives you a gist. And that's when my journey really began. Yeah. Is at 18, 19 when I came to the U.S.
That's incredible, man. There's a lot of things that stick out from what you said. First of all, you're saying that your father was the one who was healing these people. Your father was making blind people see, people walk that were in wheelchairs, people, did you say, overcome cancer too?
I mean, all sorts of, I mean, my father was known as the Miracle Man of Africa. I mean, he was the advisor, the mentor to two presidents, many people of Ghana, and many, you know, influential people all around Africa. So he was a very influential and amazing human being, still alive, and you know, a little more relaxed today, but still alive and a beautiful soul.
So does he still heal people like he did back then?
Now he's more kind of semi-retired, but his organization is still going. But I grew up seeing these amazing miracles.
Yeah, I can only imagine the impact that had on your life. What do you attribute his healing ability to? Do you just think some people are gifted with that? Where do you think that actually came from?
Sure, I had conversations with my father, and I said, you know, and this really impacted me too. I said, how do you heal? You know, because today in Western spirituality, there's so many healing modalities. There's Reiki and there's this modality and this technique and that technique and got to do this and spin the energy this way. And like, we love things that we can do. And I would ask my father, one of the, I think, the great healers in Africa at least. And I said, how do you heal? And he looked at me one day and he said, son, I don't do the healing. I simply get myself out of the way and I don't do the healing. I get myself out of the way and the healing happens. And he said, I don't see people as sick. I don't see blind people. I don't see sick people. I see the perfection of each person. I see them as whole, complete, and perfect. And I just call that forward. But I of myself don't do the healing. Life does. God does. The infinite does. Whatever label you want to put on it, you know. And it was very humbling because I realized that he didn't have an ego about, like, look how great I am. I'm the healer. And I think many times we, in life, you know, I think it's fair to say we often have an ego about, look at the great thing I did. Look at the amazing thing I did. And I think one of the secrets to life, I think one of the secrets to greatness, anyone that was truly great, you can be great and achieve a certain amount of your own, you could say, ego, power, and might. But if you look at the really great ones, I'm talking about Mandela, I'm talking about Gandhi, I'm talking about Mother Teresa, I'm not talking about Puff Daddy, and I'm not talking about, you know, Elon Musk, and I'm not talking about, you know, these folks. I'm talking about the really great ones. I think what made them great was they surrendered themselves to something bigger than themselves. They surrendered their lives to something bigger than themselves, bigger than their ego, bigger than their fears, bigger than their own limited desires. Look at Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King didn't want to be a leader of the civil rights movement. He just wanted to live a nice little life because he knew what that might mean. Look at Mandela. He probably knew if he really followed his calling, the consequences of that. And so he had to, you could say, surrender his life and say, okay, I'm here, I'm available. And I think something magical happens when we go beyond ourselves and we transcend ourselves and we surrender our lives to life. We actually plug into something bigger and we allow ourselves to be lived. And I think then we can be really used. You look at Mandela, he was used. Martin Luther King, he was used by life. Yeah, Mother Teresa, she was used. And Gandhi was used. And I think what they were able to achieve was way more than they could have done just on their own intellectual, you know, human power. They tapped into a soul force, you know, that was bigger than their own experience, their own ego. And I think life used them. And I think that's what made them really great, was their greatness was in their own surrender to life, and life used them. And I think that's the magic, you know, that's the magic of life.
That's, yeah. So one last question on your father. I mean, that's because that's just such an incredible story and a memory to have and carry with you in your life. I'm sure it shaped you know, your path. What do you think he did? Did he tap into this power at an early age? Did he tap into this healing that you're talking about?
My father, you know, at 15, was going to become a Catholic priest, but he had this, you could say, Saul into Paul conversion. This is in Ghana, West Africa. On the streets of Ghana, he just fell down to the ground, became a Christian at the time, and just started, literally at 15, started healing people. Which is, well, you know, technically in the Bible it says, the things that I do, you can do and do more. And it's what Jesus said. And so he just said, okay, let me try it. And he just started putting his hands on people. I think he was very innocent, you know, very innocent. He didn't have a lot of ego about it. And I think when we have ego about our lives and ourselves, I think it gets very dangerous, you know, when we get very full of ourselves. And I think we actually limit what life can do. We limit the miracles that can come. I think any one of us are capable of miracles. If we are all connected. We are being lived and breathed by a miracle. Right now, there is an intelligence that is breathing you. Right now, if you're listening to this conversation, something is breathing you. Life is breathing you. That same force that is functioning the sun, the stars, the moon, the universe, the 7 billion people is breathing you. And so we have a direct connection to source. We have a direct connection to consciousness. We have a direct connection to the life force energy of the universe that is actually living us. We kind of live in this little body thinking, oh, I'm just this little person called Koo, called Joe, called Susie, when there's a miracle. Trillions of cells are making love inside of you. Trillions of cells are just doing processes to even be able to listen to this conversation. Every second, miracles are occurring. So as amazing as those miracles are, wow, someone stood up out of a wheelchair. The reality is, people say, did that really happen? The reality is, every single second, there are miracles happening inside of each and every one of us right now to even exist that we don't acknowledge. When we acknowledge the miracle of what we are living, breathing miracles. When we acknowledge the miracle of each moment, looking around and seeing the interaction of the whole world, I think life takes on a whole different quality. The miracles exist, look in the mirror. The miracles exist, look around. The miracles exist, look at your loved one, look at your child, look at your grandparents, look at the world. This whole thing is outrageous. It's an outrageous experience that we as human beings are living. We are living in a galaxy that is spinning, you know, I don't know how many million miles an hour spinning around. And here we are, you know, we have the ability to see sights and colors and green and orange. We have the ability to experience orgasm. We have the ability to eat ice cream and different flavors of ice cream. We have the ability to feel happy and blissful and euphoric. Then we have the ability to feel depressed and sad. I mean, it's freaking amazing, this whole experience. But how often do we really savor each moment? How often do we really go, wow, I had the opportunity to feel sad today. What a unique texture of life. I had the opportunity to have an orgasm today. I had the opportunity to look in my child or my loved one's eyes, and I felt something. It's incredible. It's amazing. So I think the more we can open up to that, each moment, there are no ordinary moments. Each moment becomes miraculous, you know. And so, yes, what my father did was amazing. He surrendered himself. He opened himself. The key for him was realizing, I of myself don't do these miracles. Life does them through me. And I think what life can do through us is way more than anything we can do ourselves. What when we open ourselves to the flow, that's when miracles happen. We are used. That's when magic happens.
So you think everybody has the ability to heal?
Everybody.
Like your father had that ability?
Everybody has the ability.
How do you
many
tap
times
into
we
that?
I think we have to be willing first to believe that we have the ability. We have to be willing to get out of the way. We have to be willing to surrender ourselves. We have to be willing to say, okay, you know, many times we want to be the doer, especially sometimes in personal growth, which is my field. We want to be the great one. Yeah, look how great I am. We have to be willing to become zero. You know, Jesus, not a religious conversation here, but even Jesus was one of the great masters, enlightened beings to have existed. Jesus, Buddha, many great ones. And he said something interesting. He said something like, I of myself do not do these miracles. I don't do them. So he knew it wasn't him. But many times people today go to, you know, we study Reiki and healing techniques, and our ego gets involved, and we want to be like the great healer. We want to do it. We want to like impose our brilliance. And so we have to be willing to become, you know, I think it's humbling, you know, it's humbling to realize, wait a second, it's happening. Life is happening. I think how we do that is we realize I'm not the doer. Life is happening. Life has been happening for billions of years. And the more, the degree to which we can surrender ourselves to life, surrender ourselves to the intelligence, surrender ourselves to nature, then we can get ourselves out of the way. Then we can allow the energy that is breathing you, the energy that's breathing me, it's life force, it is intelligence. Then more of that energy, I think, can actually flow through us. Can really flow through us. So we have to just first believe, yes, I do have the ability to heal, but it's not I that heals. It's life that heals. There is innate intelligence inside of me that does the healing, but not me as a human being, not me as a person, not me as a separate ego individual. And then I think we can just show up. Then we can show up and let and allow miracles to happen.
This is incredible. Very fascinating stuff. And I love the healing aspect of it. I love the power of it. I love the conversation.
Coop, nice.
This is incredible. As amazing as your father was and the abilities that he had, you're 14 years old from 18. What makes you decide that you don't want to go down that path? Because he did so many great things. Why not be someone like him and step in his shoes?
You know, look, I started speaking when I was age 8. I would speak maybe once a month, a couple of times, at least once a month, maybe sometimes more to the congregation, 5,000 people. I knew when my father announced to the congregation that my son is taking over. I just knew in my heart, you know, that knowing that you have. We've all had that knowing. Maybe you get married. You're about to get married and you're like, this isn't quite right. So you're about to go down the aisle and you're like, something's off. Or, you know, you're working that job that you should be grateful for, but it's like something's not quite right here. Or you're about to do that business deal and you're like, I don't have a good feeling about this deal, you know, but you go through with it, you know. And so I had that feeling, that knowing, that intuitive, subtle sense, like something isn't quite right. This is not quite my part. But I didn't know, number one, I didn't know any other way. I wanted to help people. I didn't know any other way. Church is how I grew up. And then I started reading spiritual books. Tony Robbins, Deepak Chopra, Marilyn Limson, Louise Hay, Brian Tracy, Dennis Waitley, Jim Rohn, on and on and on and on and on. And I started seeing, wait a second, there's another way. Seminar rooms, hotel rooms. It doesn't have to be through a church structure or religion in any way. Nothing wrong with it, but it's just like, wow, there's another way of doing it, you know? And so I knew it wasn't my path, but honestly, at 14, I was too afraid to confront my father. I was afraid of losing his love. I was afraid of being alone. I was afraid of being outcast. I was just terrified. And so At 18, I looked into my future. I decided not to go to university. It was a bold decision for me. And what I realized, look, there's no shortage of people in life that think they know what's best for you. There's no shortage of people in life that will impose their ideas of what you should be living onto you if you allow it. Most of those people aren't happy in their own lives, living their own authentic lives. Now they want to impose their stuff onto you. So I looked into my future and I saw, wow, I could be successful by everyone else's standard. I could be successful, be a good son. I could be successful by my father's standards and grow his congregation, blow it to the next level, maybe millions of followers. But if I don't have myself, if I could have everything in the world, but if I don't have myself, what do I have? I believe that real success is not simply what you attain in the world, because everything in the world, you take nothing with you at the end of your life. We all die. We're all going to die. Me, you, Bob Marley, Bruce Lee, David Bowie, we're dying. Tutankhamun, none of us take any of this shit with us. It's the best car, the best Rolls Royce, the best gold ring, the best watch, Oscars, is your underpants. None of it goes. You know, you leave everything behind. The only thing you take is the love you gave and who you became in the process, the level of your own evolution. I believe that we incarnate into this human existence because our soul has certain lessons that we need to learn. And so life is a school. We have lessons we need to learn. To me, the degree to which we learn those lessons is the degree to which we are successful. And so as I looked into my future, I saw, wow, if I just attain success, I have nothing if I don't have myself. And I looked at age 20 and I visualized myself at age 30 and age 40 and age 50 and age 60 and age 70. And I thought, wow. I felt the pain of living a life that wasn't a life. I felt the pain of being 50 years old, living someone else's version for my life. And I think so many of us, we live someone else's version of our life and we wonder, why the hell am I not happy? Because we're not living our truth. Well, let me go meditate. Meditation ain't going to help you if you're living a lie. Yoga is not going to help you if you're living a lie. Drinking green juice won't help you if you're living a lie. To me, the best spirituality, the best yoga, the best prayer is tell the truth. So one of the things that keeps us stuck the most, one of the things that keeps us from, if there's one thing that people could do from this conversation, I mean, there's many, to really transform their lives, that I found then that really made the difference, is you have to be willing to tell the truth. The thing that keeps us stuck are all the ways that we lie to ourselves, we bullshit ourselves, we don't tell the truth to ourselves, then we rationalize and we settle. This relationship is, it's not bad, you know, he's kind of okay. We know it's not right. It's never been right. I'm not in love anymore, but well, we've invested so much, but we know it's not right. And we wonder why we're miserable. When you lie to yourself, you only create your own suffering. When you lie to yourself, you only create your own depression. You can't live a lie and be truly happy. You can't live someone else's life and be truly fulfilled. It's not possible. So I believe that if you're feeling depressed, if you're feeling unhappy, if you're feeling, you know, sad in some way, it's a signal that probably something isn't quite aligned. It's a message, right? Something's not aligned. So to really set ourselves free, we have to, number one, be willing to tell the truth. So I would ask everyone listening in, where in your life are you lying to yourself? Key question, what lies are you telling yourself? What are you pretending to not know? We're constantly pretending to not know. There's a game that we play. I played it when I was 14. I was young. Luckily, I didn't have too much to lose, but I played this game. I don't know. Here's the game we play. I don't know. I'm confused. I'm not sure. I don't know. And deep down, I don't know if this relationship is right. I don't know if I should leave. Okay, anyone listening, you know, have you ever been in a relationship, right? For those of you, maybe you've been in a relationship and you're in this relationship and you're like, is he the one? Is she the one? I'm not sure. Then you speak to your girlfriends or your guy friends. You're like, I don't know. What should I leave? Should I go? The moment you broke up with that, the second you broke up with that person, you told your best friend, I knew that was never going to work. You know, I knew it was. Deep down, deep down. We know, we do have a knowing, but we have to have the courage to trust that knowing. So what lies are you telling yourself? What are you pretending to not know? What is it? What are the lies you're telling yourself costing you? Many times it costs us so much, costs us aliveness, costs us joy, costs us vitality, costs us passion, but we suppress. And so we often feel this pain But because we're afraid of, oh shit, what will happen if I feel this pain? Maybe I have to change my life. What will the consequences be? So we social media it away. We eat it away. We sex it away. We work it away. Whatever we need to do so we don't feel the truth inside. To me, truth is freedom. Truth is real yoga. Truth is real religion. Truth is real spirituality. If you want to set yourself free, speak the truth. The truth will set you free. And that's what I had to do. I have to be willing to tell the truth to myself. This is not my path. Oh my goodness. What does that mean for my life? This is not my path. Even if you're not willing to take action right now, I hate my job. It's compromising my integrity. But how am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to survive? Tell the truth, because when you tell the truth, it starts a process inside of you, and it starts burning. It starts burning you up inside. It's only a matter of time. It might take a year, 5 years, 10 years. At some point, something will move. And so I had to tell the truth to myself. This is not my path. And it took me 4 years to muster up the courage. 18, looked into my future, the known path, then looked on the unknown path, man. And I said, this path is scary, but I know I have to go down this path. And I said, what do? I finally said, screw it. Nothing and no one is worth my freedom. It's my life. At some moment, I'm going to die. But if I don't follow my truth, I'm living dead anyway. I'm just living dead. I'm basically in a cemetery that is life, you know. And what I realized was, when I die, I can't go to God and say, God, you know, I wasted 5 years in that job I hated. Can I get a refund? God will say, no, I'm sorry. Time is gone. I wasted 10 years in that relationship, you know, because of what people thought about me. And can I get a refund? It's gone. Once time is gone, it's gone. We all have the same amount of time. Me, you, Bill Gates has the same amount of time. It's not like Bill Gates is Bill Gates. He has three times more of the time. We have the same amount of time in each day. What are you doing with the time that you have? What are you doing with the life that you have? So I looked into my future and I said, I need to make a decision. So I finally spoke to my father. I said, and I had to be willing to lose my relationship with my father. That was the scary thing. So I also asked people, what is the worst thing that can happen? What is the greatest fear that you have that will happen if you tell the truth? What is the scariest thing that will happen? If you can make peace with that, for me, it was, I will lose my relationship with my father forever. If you can make peace with that, man, you have unhooked yourself and you are free. I made peace with it. I said, fuck it. If I lose him, I lose him. But if I play the game of being what he wants me to be, we don't have a real relationship anyway. And I'm going to have to play the game my entire life. That is a prison. And so I said, nothing is worth my freedom. I had the conversation. I said, Dad, I love you, but I'm leaving. I'm leaving the church. This is my path. We didn't speak for 2 years. that was tough, you know. Sometimes people think, like, when you follow your, find your purpose, and we can talk about purpose, if you want, but when you find your purpose, life is easy. Everything flows. The violins come out. The angels come out. Everything is, sometimes when you find your purpose, man, that's when the real challenges happen. When you find your purpose, that's when the real difficulties happen. That's when you're really tested, because then you have to go through certain challenges and tests to prepare your soul to be able to live and fulfill the purpose that you've been given. So if you feel like you are living your purpose, but you're going through challenges, if you feel like you're living your purpose, but why is it so difficult? Am I doing something wrong? Doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. Sometimes you're actually doing something right. It's now just that life has you in soul training, you know, it's developing your soul to develop the internal, mental, emotional, spiritual strength to be able to handle the vision and the mission ahead. So dig deep. And so that was my path. I finally said, I have to do it. I left the church. Long story short, won a green card in lottery, came to the US, $1,000, one suitcase full of books, one suitcase full of clothes, and just showed up. Had no idea other than following my guidance. So if there's one key to success for me, I have continually refused to compromise my deep knowing. Anytime I have, okay, compromised my internal knowing, and we know, how many times have we received guidance? Don't do that, don't go there, and we're like, I'm crazy. And we do it and it backfires. It is so expensive when we don't listen to our truth. Listen to your truth. Nothing is worth it. And so that's how my path began. One of the keys to my success has been an uncompromising willingness to follow my internal guidance, to not compromise that despite what people have said. And I think our internal guidance and intuition is different from our mind. You know, it's a deep inner knowing that's beyond our mind. It's a deep inner knowing that's deeper than emotion and emotionality. It's just a knowing. And so that's been a key for me.
RX Bar believes in the power of transparency and lets the core ingredients do all the talking, with all of them listed on the front of the packaging. You'd likely recognize RX Bar on a shelf. They're the ones who have egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture, and other delicious ingredients like unsweetened chocolate, real fruit, and spices like sea salt or cinnamon. RX Bars are great for a number of occasions like breakfast on the go, snacks at the office, plane or train rides, bike rides or hiking, pre- and post-workout snacks, and much more. RX Bars also come in 14 delicious flavors like mango pineapple, chocolate hazelnut, peanut butter and berries, chocolate sea salt, coconut chocolate, mixed berry, blueberry, maple sea salt, apple cinnamon, mint chocolate chip, peanut butter chocolate, and coffee chocolate, and of course seasonal flavors as well. I've tried just about all their flavors at this point, and quite honestly, they're all delicious. But if I had to choose one personally, I'd say the chocolate sea salt bar is still my all-time favorite. But try them all out for yourself and decide for yourself what you like. I'm telling you, they're all good. Also, RX Bar has just debuted an RX Nut Butter, which contains a few simple and similar ingredients like egg whites, fruits, and nuts. Each single serve packet contains delicious creamy nut butter with 9 grams of high quality protein. It's squeezable, it's spreadable, it pairs great with fruit, rice cakes, pretzels, or straight out of the pouch. The nut butter flavors include honey cinnamon peanut butter, and vanilla almond butter. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/elite and enter the promo code elite at checkout. Again, that's rxbar.com/elite and the promo code is elite at checkout.
That's a very interesting story, and I love how you stuck to your guns. And even though you had a strained relationship with your father for 2 years, it was obviously very much worth it in the end. I actually have a similar story too, where about 21 years old at the time, and I had a career lined up for me. And long story short, I was supposed to go down this path. I took the training for a few months. It was a Massachusetts State Correctional Officer. So not as prestigious as, say, being a worldly healer like your father and doing all this incredible stuff. But it was still a good job, and a lot of my peers, a lot of my friends went down that path, and they were going to be – they actually got the job, and they're doing it now, which is great. You know, they wanted to do it. For me, I didn't want to do it at all, though. I hated it. I thought it was miserable. It was, you know, being surrounded by prisoners all the time and being locked up. And it was to me, it was soul crushing. But my father especially wanted me to go down that path. The benefits were great. It started off, you know, $22 an hour or whatever it was back then. It was huge. I didn't want it. And I knew in my heart that I would be miserable if I went down and did that. So it was very tough for me to go against his wishes and to do my own thing. But I just knew deep inside that it's not something I could have done and fulfilled and be happy doing. So, yeah, just like you, I went against him. And, you know, I don't think it was a couple of years that we were strained for, but there was a few months where it was kind of rough. But he ended up supporting me and knew that, I think, deep inside that this was the path that was right for me. And he supported it after a while and kind of got on board with it. So just like you, I think your father came around after a couple of years, supported you. You know, yeah. Obviously you made the right decision. I made the right decision right after I actually dropped out of that. I started the blog, which was like 6 or 7 years ago.
Nice.
So ever since then, man, I've been on my path, on my journey, and going about doing the right things to fulfill me and to make me happy inside. So I can totally appreciate where you're coming from on that end. Other people listening, though, what do you recommend that they do if they have something similar going on? Is it as simple as just saying, you know, fuck it, I'm going to do this because this makes me happy and I don't care what other people think? Or is there some kind of like setup before you dive
into it? No, it's not like I don't care what other people, fuck it, I don't care what other people think. No, I mean, I care deeply what my father thought. I just knew that if I lived his version of my life, it wouldn't serve anyone. If I lived his version for my life, I wouldn't be happy. I wouldn't be happy. Probably I would make him unhappy and we wouldn't even have an authentic relationship and I would end up resentful and miserable. And what does that serve? You know, it doesn't serve anything to suppress my gifts and not give my gift to the world. So it's not like, fuck it, screw you, I have something to prove. It's more like, what ask yourself, the first key, be willing to be honest with yourself. Tune into your heart. Tune into your soul and feel, what is my truth? What is my deepest truth for myself, for my life, my purpose, what I really, really want authentically? If it happens to align with what your parents want, fantastic. If it doesn't, have the courage to be honest. This is your life. Ultimately, you don't owe anyone anything other than being the most authentic version of yourself. Authentic version of yourself. Now, you might say, well, I just want to smoke cocaine, and that's my oath. Probably not, okay? You know, it's probably not. So beyond just what do I want, I'm saying, what's the most authentic truth in my heart that is seeking to express truly? And have the, it takes courage to be who you really are. And I always believe that the truth serves everybody. It serves everybody. It will cause those around you to grow. But it's not from a place of, I don't care, screw it. It's from a place of, this is who I am, and I love you. And you can communicate your truth to those around with love, with concern, with care, with compassion. Most of the people around you, like your father, my father, and folks listening in, your family around you, you know, even if they're negative about what you want to do, or they don't support, or whatever, you usually... they mean well. You know, your dad wanted you to be maybe a correctional officer to get the $22 an hour job with the great benefits, not because he hated you and wanted you to fail, probably because he cared about you and wanted you to have a decent life, you know. So he meant well, and it's okay. So by me telling the truth to my father, it caused my father to grow. It caused my father to become more compassionate, more understanding. So the truth serves everyone. The truth helps everyone evolve. And you don't serve anyone by holding your truth back. But you can communicate with kindness, with compassion, with understanding, and realize that most people's reactions to you reveal more about them than it does about you. And usually they're coming from concern and love. They just don't always know how to express it. So if you actually don't change your perspective and you stop taking it personally, right, then it frees you up when they say, oh, don't do that thing, to say, hey, mom, dad, thank you. I really appreciate your concern for me. You know, I really get that in this moment, you're coming from love. I just love you. I love you guys. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be okay. I just, thanks for really wanting me to have this $22 an hour job. I just know you just so care about me. Give them a hug. They're allowed their path, and then you just live your path, and you can still honor those around you while following your path. It's not one or the other. But for those that are listening in too, that might be going, well, how do I find my purpose? What step? Here's what I'll say. Sometimes we think we have to like know exactly what our purpose is, you know, to, because people are thinking, well, it's easy for you. Your dad was a minister, you know, of course you knew what your purpose was. I have no clue what my purpose is. One of the myths I think is you have that is perpetuated in personal growth is you have to figure out your purpose up front. You have to know what it is, be able to write it neatly in a little mission statement on a poster board, and then like you have your purpose. The purpose is not something you have to figure out. It's an evolutionary process, and at different levels of your own mental, emotional, and spiritual development, your purpose is going to change as you evolve. Your purpose is going to evolve as you evolve. So the purpose you have now, or at 18, or at 25, is not going to be the same as it is at 45 and 50. And so know this. If you're not sure what your purpose is, it's cool. No problem. Nothing's wrong. Don't wait to figure out your purpose. Ask yourself, what do I love? What do I love? What turns me on? What makes me most alive? What brings me most alive? What would I do for free? What brings me most joy? What resonates the most? And actually take one step and go in that direction. Take a step, go in that direction. What you'll find is when you take a step, then life will reveal to you what's next. Then you take another step, life then reveals to you what's next. You take another step, life reveals to you what's next. You can't figure out the entire flow of your life and purpose from over here looking in front, trying to figure it out. It's when you take the step, life, your purpose is revealed to you in the process of living itself. Then over months and years, you end up living into your purpose rather than figuring out your purpose up front. Your purpose is not something to be, if you look at Oprah, she couldn't have figured out this was her purpose, you know, 40 years ago. She just took one step, became a newscaster, took another step, became a talk show host, took another step, boom, here she is. Look at Obama, regardless of your politics, who would have thought he was going to be president of the United States? This guy, Barack Obama, come on. But one step, social work, another step, senator, another step, but here he is. Your purpose gets revealed to you. Fortune favors the bold. Many times we sit on the couch trying to pray, meditate, and we're waiting for the download of our purpose. Go in a direction of what lights you up. Four simple questions to ask yourself that are really practical that I think is important for everyone to know. What do I love? What turns me on? What would I do for free? What brings me alive? All variations of the same question. What do I love? What turns me on? What brings me alive? What would I do for free? I would be doing what I'm doing for free. I was doing it for free. You know, people often don't know that. I would sneak into my father's church in the middle of the night. We lived behind my father's church. And I would sneak into his church in the middle of the night with the lights off. And I would speak to the empty chairs, man, from age 12 to 18 for hours. Hours. I would visualize myself in auditoriums. I'd visualize myself giving speeches. Literally, I'd talk for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, you know, giving seminars to imaginary people. It was love. And so when I do it now, it's love. I would do it for free. So ask yourself, what do I love? What would I do for free? What turns me on? What lights me up? That's question number one. Then actually ask yourself, what tangible specific skills do I actually have? What real, you might say, well, I love basketball, but I'm 2'1" and I never played basketball in my life. I'm not sure how this is going to go, right? So what real skills do you have based on your actual experience, actual real world experience? Well, maybe you have 30 years in real estate. Maybe you have 25 years as a mechanical engineer. Like, what tangible, real, valuable skills do you have? Because that's important. Third question is looking at what problems are you uniquely able to solve? What problems are you uniquely gifted and able to solve that comes naturally to you? Challenges, many times, things that come naturally to us, because they're easy to us, we don't value them. We're like, I can do this thing, you know, but who cares? Because it comes so easy to us, but we don't realize that for someone else, you know, maybe for us, we're good with fitness, or for us, we're good with numbers and accounting, or for us, we're good with technology. For someone else, they don't understand numbers to save their lives. And so what comes easily for us is challenging for someone else. And so here's the key. I always say, don't focus or pursue money. Let me repeat. Don't chase money. Focus your attention on adding value. Adding value to people's lives, adding value to your clients, adding value to your customers. Add value. Value is created when you're able to solve a pain, problem, or challenge. When someone has a pain, problem, or challenge, and you're able to solve that, this adds value. Money is the exchange of adding value to people's lives when you solve a pain, problem, or challenge. So when you focus on adding value, solving a pain, problem, or challenge, money is the natural byproduct of that. Money is a natural byproduct of adding value. The more value you add, the more money you have the potential to make if you structure your vehicle correctly. So that's the third question. Fourth thing is really looking at, what group of people do I feel a connection to? What group of people do I feel an affinity to? What group of people do I love? Maybe you feel a connection to the elderly. Maybe you feel a connection to single mothers. Maybe you feel a connection to teenage orphans. Maybe you feel a connection to, the dolphins, you know, that aren't even human. They're animal species, whatever. You feel a connection to that group of people for a reason. Your soul is connected for a reason. And likely that might also point you in the direction of where your purpose lies. And so to me, those are four practical questions, but purpose is not something you have to figure out. It's something that you live into as you take a step. And look, to have a more even esoteric sort of conversation, every second of your life is your purpose. And every second of your life is the opportunity to live your purpose moment to moment. You know, so even if you're not, your purpose is not your job. There's your job and there's your purpose. And you can live your purpose, your true purpose. I think all of our purpose ultimately is to love, is to express love, you know. You can live that purpose regardless of what you do at the grocery store, on this podcast, you know, in traffic. Find ways every moment of your life to live your purpose. And then create a vocation and a structure of your skills to channel your purpose through in a way that most honors and aligns with who you are.
Yeah, I love a lot of the things that you mentioned there. and specifically the fact that you don't have to really think all day or think for years about trying to figure out what your purpose is. You basically just take action on the things that you love and the things that are true to you. I'm thinking back now, just kind of brainstorming. I've had many purposes over the years. 14 years old, my purpose, I was 120, 130 pounds in high school, freshman year, sophomore year. My purpose at 14 years old was to put on muscle and get bigger. 18 years old, I had incredible anxiety and depression. My purpose for the next year and a half, 2 years, was to overcome the depression and anxiety and stop the suicidal thoughts I was getting. 21 years old, I got a little more confidence in me. I was terrible with women. My purpose at that point for the next 3 years was to get good with women and get a lot of dates and hook up with girls.
Did it work?
It worked phenomenal.
Don't want to put you on the spot.
24 years old. I started helping other guys out and started my dating blog. My first foray into online business was actually dating advice for other guys. So from 23, 24 years old on, and then that evolved into the Elite Man podcast, the magazine. But the point is, and now my purpose is, you know, putting as much content out there as possible, helping as many guys as possible on the magazine, on the podcast. That kind of thing. But the point is, the purpose has shifted over the years. Every 2-3 years, it has had a major shift and a pivot that has come along. And those things are, I think, a natural part of life. But the real key is to take that first step, to not sit around, to not wait around for things to happen or for God to come down from the sky. You got to take action, man.
Look, go down that
path.
In my book, the first line of my book, the first page goes something like, no one is coming.
Yes.
No one is coming. That's not a morbid thing. No one is coming. If you're waiting for the Buddha, if you're waiting for Santa Claus, if you're waiting for, you know, Bruce Lee or Oprah, no one's coming. They've been done already, you know, because you're here. We've all been endowed with a seed of the same spark of the intelligence of life, the infinite consciousness. No one is coming. And I think everyone, many of us, we want to be great. But look, Oprah's not going to knock on your doorstep and say, hey, I've been looking for you. Or Bill Gates not going to knock on your doorstep and say, I have $1 billion for you. Greatness is a moment-to-moment choice. We all have that power inside of us. And we have to stop, you know, projecting onto the superheroes out in the world and abdicating our power and say, you know what? Mandela can do it. I have that insight. I'm capable of what Mandela and Mother Teresa and Elon Musk and Oprah and Steve Jobs and all these, you know, amazing people just showed us our own capacity in specific areas of life, whether it's finance, whether it's creativity, whether it's service, whether it's loving. They're just showing us what we're all capable of. And if one human's capable of it, then you're capable of it.
Is your process of finding your purpose, is it as simple as just reflecting on those four questions?
Yes.
And taking action?
Yeah. Reflect on those four questions. That's definitely a place to begin. I mean, there is a little bit more, but that's a place to start.
Okay, I was going to say, there's a lot of other people out there, self-help. And the thing with self-help, the personal development world, it's great. It really is. It has changed my life. I think it's changed your life. But there's also a lot of crap out there, too, in the self-help world. There's a lot of people that just put up a lot of shit just to kind of have stuff to put out there. But oftentimes, it's a lot more simple than people want to actually admit.
Yeah. Look, I would say start with those four keys, you know, in terms of purpose, but also, you know, I don't want to make things too complex, but look, as children, right, we're born free. As if you look at a child, the child is, you know, blissful. A baby is blissful, right? It just laughs, it gurgles. Look into a child's eyes, it's in touch with the spark of in the infinite. I mean, you can be the world's greatest gangster, the most cruel dictator, but you look into they look into a kid's eyes and they melt, you know, because we're reminded of our own purity, our own innocence. So a child, they're whole, they're complete, they're perfect. They're living their purpose in this moment, just being. A child will jump on a table and sing and scream and shout. And it will sing. It doesn't care if it's not Adele or Bruno Mars, or jump on a table naked. And it doesn't care, am I fat? What do you think? It's just expressing itself. It will love. It's not care, oh, you're black, you're white, you're green, you're skinny. It just loves, right? It's just a baby is just loving. But what happens? What happened to that free-flowing magic, that free-flowing expression? We're born into this world, then we meet our parents. And our parents, they just do the best that they can do based on their conditioning in their life. And so two things happen that start contracting us that will affect our purpose. So the first thing happens is we meet our parents and maybe we're born into certain circumstances, pain, trauma, divorce, hurt. Maybe we were neglected. Maybe our parents didn't know how to meet our emotional needs. And so these things are painful. So slowly we start learning to shut down, disconnect. You know, we start erecting all these defense mechanisms in order to avoid pain of what's going around. So we start learning defense mechanisms to avoid pain, and we start shutting parts of ourselves down. Then we start learning a way of being in the world, to go into the world, to like the sense of who do I need to be in order to be loved. And we start developing these masks and these personas and becoming these, contorting ourselves to become these characters, these personas, you know, these we develop these identities and personas. We become the nice person, the funny person, the know-it-all, the good person. I mean, on and on and on, the caretaker. That we think, so we identify with this thing we've become, thinking ultimately out of survival, thinking this is who I am. But the question I would ask people as you consider your purpose is, who you are, who you really are? Or is it simply who you've been conditioned to be? Because much of the time we become this person at age 20, age 30. We think, no, this is who I really am. But it's simply who we've been conditioned to be. And ultimately, if you're not in touch with who you really authentically are, but you identify with this mountain of conditioning that's not truly who you are, then what you think your purpose is going to be and what you think you want is not going to be truly authentic. It's just going to be what you think you want based on who you think you are. And so to really access your purpose, you have to, I think, peel away the layers of illusion and inauthenticity and really access the authentic truth, the authentic nature, which is often clouded under layers of pain and survival mechanisms. And I think the more you can get to the pure source of your truth, the more you're able to access, you know what, this is what I really want in life. I thought I wanted to be this thing because by being this thing, you know, I could maybe feel important, and I didn't feel important as a child. So now if I date 400 women or get the best woman or make $1 billion or build this thing, then I'm going to be this, you know. And what I found, look, I work with many billionaire clients, many successful people that run industries, run countries. Many of them come to me and they say, "Kud, I have everything. I have everything. I have a $20 million house. I have the cars, I have the jets. I have everything that I thought was going to make me happy, and I'm still miserable. And now I'm really screwed because now I have everything I thought was going to make me happy, and I'm still not happy." This is a big problem. At least when you're going for it, you think there's always the hope. Now when you get it and you're still not happy, it's even worse. It's even more depressing because you're like, shit, now I'm here and I'm, you know, now it's almost more hopeless. And so you might get what you thought you wanted based on who you thought you were, but if you're not in touch with who you are, it's not aligned. And so to truly access, ultimately the bigger thing is to truly access your real purpose. You have to get in touch with who you really are. From that authentic place, then you can really feel your truth, feel your heart, feel your soul, and then really listen to what it is that's seeking to express through you. Listen to the truth, like, you know, this is what I really want to do. Not because my father told me, or not because society is going to value me more. This is what I want to do. And to me, living an authentic and fulfilled life requires that you live your truth, your deepest truth.
What is the single best way to access that truth and get in touch with what really makes you happy?
There's so many things, man.
What's a couple of things that popped to mind?
The first thing that popped in my, and again, I'm just kind of trying to give practical things for the simplicity of this conversation. I mean, look, I take people through processes that help people unravel their conditioning, right? That's really, I think it's a process. It's not a quick fix thing. You have to kind of unravel your conditioning to access your truth. That takes time. That takes a process. But for sake of this conversation, if you're listening, like, wow, what can I do to access my truth? Wow, here's my motivational practical tip for the day. Remember this: you are going to die and feel your death. You are going to die. It's guaranteed. Me, you, Bob Marley, Muhammad Ali, David Bowie, Bruce Lee, you're going to die. I know there's people today that are into biohacking, and I'm going to live forever. I'm going to live 1,000 years. Look, Jesus died, Buddha died, Mother Teresa died, Mandela died. You and I sure as hell going to fucking die. That's the bottom line. At some moment, this body is going. Yeah, we might live till 180, but we have an expiration date. And so one of the keys I have found to really getting yourself clear, getting yourself aligned, is feel your death. We're constantly avoiding death. Like, oh, I'm going to live forever. Oh, no. Feel your death. When you really feel the reality of your death, it's, whoa, it's real. We live like we have forever, but the fact is none of us know when that moment's going to come. None of us know when someone important in your life dies. It sets things and priorities straight real quick because you realize the reality of death is real. We know it, but we kind of avoid it. So I'm saying don't avoid death. Don't distract yourself with meaningless activities. Don't distract yourself with meaningless relationships. Feel your death because every second you have, you can't get back, and it's so precious. So for me, every day, I bring death close to my cheek. I look death in the eyes and I say, hi, death, thank you. Yes, today could be the day. Am I ready? Ask yourself, am I ready? And if you can't say, you know what, today I'm ready at any moment to die, then ask yourself, why not? Why am I not ready? What do I need to do to be ready? Who do I need to speak to? Who do I need to forgive? Who do I need to communicate to? What incompletions do I have? What do I need to do? What do I need to express? What do I need to share? What do I need to create? What do I need to express and give to the world so that I'm ready? Feel it. And not as a morbid thing, but use the reality that, hey, your life could be over. Who knows when? It's short. It's a gift. Tomorrow is not a right. It's a privilege. Use that as inspiration and motivation to not mess around, to not waste time, to not BS, to not lie, to not just to get real and authentic. Because every second is precious. Feel your death. Meditate on your death. Make death your best friend and let that inspire you like never before. That's what I would say.
That's incredible, man. Last real question, and then we're going to wrap it up. I alluded to this earlier, living love fully. That's the ending to your book. What does that actually mean, and how does that apply to this, what we're talking about?
Look, it applies to what we're talking about because we're talking about death. And when you realize at the end of your life, man, that Lamborghini, and I've had a Lamborghini, bro. You're not taking it with you. It's a great car. I love driving my Lamborghini when I had it. You know, and I don't talk about it much because it's not really that relevant. But I've had an amazing life. Take none of it with you when you die. The only thing that matters when you die is how much you love. My mother died last year, and I got to spend the most amazing year with my mother. She lived in London. I was flying back to London every 2 to 3 weeks from Los Angeles. The best year of my life being with her and loving her. And I realized the only moments are the moments of connection. The only moments at the end of your life, most of the shit that we're worrying about and stressing about and making important, we won't even remember a year from now, let alone at the end of our lives. So what's really important, and what's really important, is the loving. Did you love? Did you really open your heart? Did you connect? Did the ones in your life, does your mom, does your dad, did they know how much you love them? It's only one regret. I mean, I don't have any regrets, man. But to be honest, in this conversation, there's only one regret I really have. And I saw my mother a lot. I saw her a lot. I was very close to her. And I saw her a lot even in her final year. I only have one regret, man. Not spending more time with her. You know, not loving, not being with her more. And I asked myself, that year of intense loving, and her and I were close. Why did I not do that 20 years ago? Why did we not live this way like she was dying 20 years ago? Why wait? And obviously life is in 2020, you know, hindsight. And so I just want to inspire everyone to say, look, love is what counts. Love is what matters. Without love, life is meaningless. Love is the only language that anyone understands, and it's the only thing that is going to is the only thing you're going to remember at the end of your life anyway, you know? And so that's what it means, love. Love now, and you always have an opportunity to love your parents. You don't, you know, sometimes you go, oh, I have to build a foundation, build 50 schools in, you know, in Guatemala. No. Try just loving your in-laws who piss you off, you know. Try just being a little more loving and spreading love to the guy at the grocery store or your boss who, you know, rubs you the wrong way. Or because ultimately what I realize is we're all doing the best that we can. You know, we all, you know, as human beings, we all were these beautiful little babies, children, and then we faced pain and trauma and hurt, and some of us were abused, some of us were beaten, some of us went through some really intense stuff. And most of us, we don't know that guy in the grocery store, that guy working in the gas station, that guy, you know, driving the car, we don't know what their stories are. And some people have been through so much that it's amazing, it doesn't condone their crazy behaviors, but it's amazing that they're even walking around. And so I think if we're able to realize, wow, as a humanity, we're doing okay, you know? And to really lead with love, to come with love, to recognize what... Look, I was in Cambodia 12, 13 years ago, and I don't know if you know much about Cambodia, but Pol Pot took over Cambodia, where they had a genocide, 3 million people were killed. I mean, it was massive. You guys can do your research. And people were just killed for no reason, you know? And I remember having this tour guide who took me around for the day, this lovely lady, but she was so mean, man. She was, I'm not going to even use the word that I thought in my mind about this woman. I mean, she was just horrible. I hated this woman. I mean, it was, yeah. I was being very unspiritual. I was ashamed of myself. I'm like, this woman is a blank. And she just was just, oh, a nightmare to be with. And then she started telling me about the history of Cambodia. 3 million people were killed and people were taken from families. And I realized, I put the time together, and I realized, how old are you? She told me, she was 30-something. I said, where were you during this time? Her eyes lit up. Said, well, I was 8 years old, and they walked into my house, the army, snatched me away from my parents, put us in chains, and made us walk up north for 3 months. And she started tearing up, and she said, I thought I'd never see my parents ever again. And she told me about some of the horrific things that she went through, man. I just was silent. I'm like, wow. And as she told me what she went through, I felt ashamed because I was judging her. And I realized, based on what she went through, it's amazing that she could sit here and even have a conversation with me without wanting to, like, blow something up. Without wanting to, like, really, like, you know, and I just realized you just don't know what someone is going through and what it's taking for them to sit right there. And I think that's why we can all just offer a little bit of love, you know. Look, I travel the world, man. I'm on the road 200 days a year, 150 days a year. I was just in Colombia. I was just in Brazil, Peru, Ghana, Japan, China, Indonesia in the last month. And I was literally in the most, that used to be the most dangerous place in the world, a place called La Comuna 13. It's where Pablo Escobar, the drug dealer in Medellin, had all of his operation. And 20 years ago was the most dangerous place in the world in terms of, you know, murder rates. And everyone said, oh, don't go there now, it's still dangerous. So being me, I went there. You know, I went there, walked around. I met the most beautiful, kind, amazing human beings, full of life and creativity and passion and kindness, and children running around, and realize everyone's living life. And so black, white, green, orange, we're all different, we're all different cultures, and but we all want the same thing, and we all want to be loved and to love, and that's what matters, bro. That's it.
Coot, there's been so much wisdom shared in this episode. I really appreciate your time, man. Is there a last parting send-off message, though, you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience, and then also a place our listeners can check out more about, sure, your work, and of course the book you just came out with, which I want to get my hands on myself because it just seems amazing.
Look, I think I've said a lot in this conversation. You've inspired a lot from this conversation, so thank you. Your presence has done that. I have two words, man. Love now. Bottom line, not tomorrow, not next year, because if today was the last day of your life, would you be ready? If today was it, the people in the 9/11. disaster, had no idea they weren't coming home that night. The people in Southeast Asian tsunami or Houston or any of the natural disasters, you know, had no idea that they wouldn't come home that night and look their loved ones in the eyes and be able to say, you know what, I'm so sorry for what I did, or I really love you. Please, folks, make sure the people in your life know how much you love them and what you feel, because today could be the last day. If today was your last day, would you be ready? And if not, why not? And what do you need to do to be ready? Because that moment could be any moment. So live like you're dying and love fully. That's really all I have to say. And, you know, folks, if you've been inspired, you know, by this conversation, it's been great connecting on the Elite Man podcast. I'm just honored, you know. Thank you for having me on. I always love to look, my life is service, and for me this is not just a business, although yes, I've built a successful business. For me, it's a calling. What I do is a passion, it's a calling. I eat shit, sleep this stuff. And so if there's any way I can continue to add value to your life, a couple of ways: my website, www.cootblackson.com. Definitely check out my book, Amazon. It's called You Are the One, or www.youaretheonebook.com. There's some free gifts there. Shoot me an email. Let me know. Hey, shoot me a message. You heard me on the Leap Man. Would love to say hi. The other thing I'll say is, you know, one thing I'm really passionate about, if any of you, you're feeling inspired and you're feeling like really maybe ready for your next level of breakthroughs, twice a year I do a very unique transformational journey in Bali. You can find out more at www.boundlessblissbali.com. I take 18 visionaries and leaders on a transformational experiential 12-day immersion seminar training without walls that really catapults you to the next level. So you can find out more there.
Awesome, man. Coot, thanks again for coming on, brother. Really do appreciate it. Guys, check out his book. Check out his links. Thanks again, man, for coming on. I'll talk to you soon. Take care and have a good one.
Sounds great, man. It was lots of fun.
Have you joined the Elite Man newsletter yet? If not, get on it now. Go to EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter and sign up to get special Elite Man content not seen nor heard anywhere else. Get all of our bonus podcast information, sneak peeks into upcoming shows, behind-the-scenes content, special offers, and exclusive Elite Man updates you won't find anywhere else. I'm telling you, if you're not on our newsletter yet, you're missing out. Go to EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter and become a true member of the Elite Man community. I look forward to speaking to you soon and connecting with you even further. EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.